Now entering the truth zone, deep into the vortex of the information revolution, with your host, Michael B.
My name is Michael B., and this is The Truth Zone, deep within the vortex of the information revolution, coming to you live on this June 29th, 2017, as we approach the end of yet another week. And yesterday, to give a recap, I'm calling this part two about conspiracy theorist, being called a conspiracy theorist, and why that term was created. And of course, just to quickly recap, we know that the CIA did that in order to discredit and humiliate those that questioned the Warren Commission on the JFK assassination. And it's been a very good ploy used over more than 50 years here in this country in particularly, and it's being used now. We question anything. We're conspiracy theorists to those people that still cling to their cognitive dissonance. And if you don't know what cognitive dissonance is, basically, and you can look up the exact definition, it's primarily you hold on to certain ideas that basically frame your belief system. And that could be religiously, and that could also be secularly in politics and ethics and whatever else that you want to include. And a prime example are those people that still, even though, and it's funny, even though they criticize the government and call certain, they're called actors now. I find that interesting that the word is being used, because they're actors, all right, because it looks like this is just one big charade as far as I'm concerned. And I'm going to get into two subjects on why I think that's the case. And so people criticize certain actors, politicians as criminals. They believe in certain conspiracies, but when it's a conspiracy that they don't believe in or refuse to believe, even though there's compelling evidence supporting that there is indeed a conspiratorial event, instead, what they do is they just say, you're wearing a tinfoil hat, you're delusional, you're paranoid, and they say, no, you believe in space aliens and lizard hybrids and all that other good stuff. And now, of course, the new layer of that is fake news. Oh, your source is fake. Oh, this is BS. Oh, you got it from CBS, or you got it from the Daily Caller, or you got it from RT.com, or CNN, Fox, Infowars.com. It doesn't matter. If the person wants to refuse to believe what they're reading, watching, or listening to, now it's fake. Even though you can pull up 5, 6, 10 different sources, both mainstream and independent, all supporting that story or giving almost an identical narrative of a position, it's fake. And that basically was part one. So I'm going to talk a little bit more, you know, about conspiracies. Now, before I do that, I said at the end of the show that I had forgotten to grab a clip that I wanted. And it comes from the Planet of the Apes, the first movie, towards the end. And I think it's very apropos. It certainly does describe a certain kind of mankind. I don't think it represents all of us. I think it represents the globalists, the global elites, the George Soroses of the world. And I think this statement is very true. See, Planet of the Apes was all about man's fall by his own accord. Man destroyed the earth through implied nuclear war, and somehow apes evolved and took over the planet. And the apes, although they treated humans like chattel, they had very strong amicable laws. Ape does not kill ape. They were very much more moral than we are. They didn't kill their own kind for sport. True, they use humans, but I think you get the point. So I want to play this clip. This is Cornelius reading the 29th scroll, verse 6, as the movie came to an end. And for some reason, it's not playing. Gee, computer's locking up. Here we go.
Set down by the greatest ape of all, our lawgiver. Cornelius, come here. Reach into my pocket. Read to him the 29th scroll, 6th verse.
Beware the beast man, for he is the devil's pawn. Alone among God's primates, he kills for sport, or lust, or greed. Yea, he will murder his brother to possess his brother's land. Let him not breed in great numbers, for he will make a desert of his home and yours. Shun him. Drive him back into his jungle lair, for he is the harbinger of death.
And there you have it. And I really feel that Cornelius is really talking about, again, the global elites that, well, they are satanic in nature. And certainly it's obvious that they serve the beast of the Bible. I think, in my estimation, that's pretty clear. So in the headline of the show, I stated how ISIS and Islamic terror have really escalated in the past, you know, 8-9 years or so. And we know who was president during that time. And it's interesting how Obama was picked to become president and why he was so protected. Now, I'm going to play two clips, maybe not back to back, we'll see. Whether these allegations are true or not, we'll probably never know. And again, I think it's obvious why Barack Obama has never filed a lawsuit against people like Jerome Corsi or Joel Gilbert, who have come out with articles and films. And, you know, for sake of argument, you could say these outlandish accusations. But as I proved yesterday, that the global elites and the hierarchy of the Muslims proliferate a lot of pedophilia and homosexuality. It's quite prevalent at the top levels in both of those two groups, which is why it's no surprise that Islam has grown so much. So I'm going to play this Jerome Corsi interview that was on the Brian Craig show. And this goes back to, I believe, 2011 or 2013. Yeah, it was, this was in 2013. So I'm going to play that clip. And you judge for yourself. Now, Jerome Corsi, this man was basically an insider for many, many years. And he operates WND.com, WorldNet Daily. And he's a regular on the Alex Jones show. And many of the things he says has come true. And like I said, you know, he's an insider, folks. He was part of it. And he saw it necessary to leave that and expose this grand stage that we're all on. And it's just time to come to grips with a few things. So here's Jerome Corsi from 4 years ago.
Jerry Corsi.
Hey, Jerome Corsi, it's Brian Craig. We have an interview scheduled with you. How are you?
Yeah. Hey.
All right. Well, here we go. Well, listen, my name is Brian Craig. We're speaking with Jerome Corsi. And I got to tell you, Jerome Corsi, the first time I really started following Jerome Corsi was back during the Swift Boat era with John Kerry, who's back in the news again as the man who prepped Barack Obama for that great performance last
pretty week. Amazing. Pretty amazing, isn't it?
But I got to tell you, Jerome Corsi, I read your columns all the time in WorldNet Daily. Of course, I'm familiar with your books. And we're going to talk about your latest book in a few minutes, The Great Oil Conspiracy, which is really a companion book to an earlier book you wrote, Black Gold Stranglehold, which is fascinating. But you've been doing some incredible investigative reporting when it comes to Barack Obama and Trinity Church, which of course is Reverend Jeremiah Wright's church, and you've come out with some very controversial things. One of them sounds very crazy, but when you put the puzzle pieces together, it sounds incredibly credible. You have a new column. You've talked about Jesse Jackson actually arranged the marriage between Barack and Michelle Obama.
Yes.
Now tell us about that, and also what's the significance of that?
Okay, well, the whole issue that I'm investigating, just to get right to it, has been the issue that Obama is homosexual. This has been a rumor since I started investigating Obama back to 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I never had any of the evidence for it, so it was never anything without full evidentiary ability to prove a statement like that. It's not something you would publish. What's changed is that in recent months, members of Trinity United Church who know Obama, Obama's personally, have begun to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this article about Jesse Jackson really explores the fact that who is Michelle. And it shows that basically one of the reasons that Barack Obama joined Trinity Church was because Trinity Church, Reverend Wright, runs what he calls the Down Low Club.
Uh-huh.
And what the Down Low Club means is black members of the congregation who have sex with men but are not living homosexual lives get arranged marriages with women in the congregation who might not otherwise be married.
Mm-hmm.
In order to cover up their sexuality, their bisexuality, or their homosexuality. Now, I traced Michelle Robinson, who is Michelle Obama, you know, wife of the president, and that she was very close to Jesse Jackson. She was close to Jesse Jackson's daughter, Santita. In fact, the Jacksons have said, well, they carpooled through high school together. But the story, as it turns out, is that Michelle Robinson spent so much time with the Jesse Jackson family in Chicago, with Santita and her brother Jesse Jr., who's the current congressman, that they call the Jackson children call Michelle Sis, short for sister.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're very close together. Now, As I trace it back, it all goes to the orbit, you know, between Jesse Jackson and his influence in the Democratic Party, key operatives, together with Reverend Wright, who's run this down low club. And I started getting on to the fact that Obama was lying about his relationship with Michelle, because Obama told a couple of different stories. When Obama was in Moscow in 2009, he said, well, he and Michelle met in school. But, of course, Michelle Obama got her degree from Harvard Law School in 1988. Barack Obama did not arrive at Harvard Law School until that fall, and he graduated 3 years later in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
The commonly accepted story is they met in Chicago at the end of Obama's first year in law school, when he was an intern at a firm called Sidley Austin, and Michelle was also a lawyer at the firm, and she was assigned to be his mentor. Now, this gets to be a tangled web, because I interviewed also Alan Hulton, the postal carrier, who delivered mail to the Ayers, the parents of Weather Undergrounder bomber Bill Ayers, and he met Obama when he was an intern at Sidney Austin, and basically said that the reason the Sidney Austin firm came into this thing was because Sidley Austin was a firm did a lot of work for Commonwealth Edison, the electric company in Chicago, that, you know, Bill Ayers' father was the chairman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Obama and Michelle got engaged in 1991. And while they were engaged, Valerie Jarrett, now in the White House as Obama's advisor, she was Deputy Chief of Staff to Mayor Richard Daley, and Valerie Jarrett hired Michelle into the mayor's office. She hated working there. She was not, it was a patronage job, and evidently Michelle did not do very much work. She just collected a paycheck. The report is Michelle sat there and read a newspaper all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the political connections continued. Michelle's father, Frazier Robinson III, you know, who Michelle talked about at the convention, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and he walked around with crutches, was also a volunteer Democratic precinct captain in South Chicago, and he had a lot of street money the Daily Machine handed out Chicago South Side for black voters to turn out and vote for the Democratic Party machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as it comes along, you know, you get Jesse Jackson, Valerie Jarrett, Jeremiah Wright, and a whole bunch of them are putting Michelle together to be the wife of Obama as an arranged marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and the idea was that Michelle, who kind of has a nasty disposition, and is not exactly the kind of thing that is the kind of woman that all heterosexual men are going to be immediately attracted to live with as a wife.
That's for sure.
Well, then you've got Obama saying, you know, basically more interested sexually in men, so it makes the match possible. Michelle gets out of it. She looks the part. Obama's not interested in her for sex, but she gets a life of luxury and wealth if he succeeds politically.
Yeah.
So, you know, as this goes along, Valerie Jarrett continues to promote Michelle in cushy jobs. Valerie Jarrett went to Chicago's Department of Planning. She took Michelle with her. Then she became the chairwoman of the Chicago Medical Center, and Michelle got another cushy job at the Chicago Medical Center. She was making $317,000 a year, and again, not doing very much for it. So you've got a lot of evidence here which shows the network of people, Jesse Jackson, Valerie Jarrett, Reverend Wright,
mm-hmm.
explaining how Obama and Michelle got together, and the backstory being that, you know, this is an arranged marriage to cover up Obama's homosexual activity, and what Michelle gets out of it is a lot of money and a life of luxury as he advances politically.
Well, we're talking with Jerome Corsi, New York Times best-selling author, and you're a senior columnist over and an investigative reporter at WorldNet Daily. I don't miss any of your columns. Now, this this story that Obama has a homosexual past, I know a lot of people think, well, this is crazy. Well, his mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, was a bisexual man. And I always thought, Jerome Corsi, it was a little odd that Obama...
Which, by the way, sorry, there's no such thing. If you suck dick, you're gay. I'm sorry, you're homosexual. Thank you.
Obama's grandfather in Hawaii would take this young man, he was a boy at the time, and say, all right, this bisexual senior citizen, he's now your mentor.
Right. And in fact, there's that poem that Obama wrote from Occidental called Pops, which is a very suspect poem. It sounds like it's confessing homosexual activity with Frank Marshall Davis. Because Frank Marshall Davis is Pops, and if you read that poem, it's very sexually suggestive.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that's the whole arrangement with Frank Marshall Davis. Frank Marshall Davis wrote an autobiographical pornographic sex novel.
Yeah.
It confessed to having relationships with, underage boys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
Engaged in threesomes, homosexual relationships. I mean, you name it, Frank Marshall Davis confessed to do it.
Well, your investigations into Obama has been going on since Obama's been on the scene nationally here, and there's been a lot of – I follow Obama very closely, and when I read your work, I learn things. For example, you recently wrote – this was shocking to me – that Frank Marshall Davis actually has connections to Valerie Jarrett's family.
Right, because her – Valerie Jarrett comes from – Vernon Jarrett is her – father-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And Vernon Jarrett worked on Chicago newspapers with Frank Marshall Davis in the 30s, and they participated in organizing and working in communist labor unions in the 30s. I have letterhead with their names on it together. They worked at the same newspapers. I mean, so they both came up in the communist circles, Frank Marshall Davis and Valerie Jarrett's father-in-law. And, of course, these were the circles out of which Obama was mentored. In fact, Joel Gilbert goes so far as to argue that Frank Marshall Davis was Barack Obama's biological father.
That's right.
He's my real father.
That's right, yeah.
Certainly the ties with Frank Marshall Davis and Obama are very deep. Frank Marshall, Obama wrote in his autobiography, he mentions Frank some 30 times. Never identifies the mentor's last name. It was a communist originally, a guy named Gerald Horn, who identified that Frank was Frank Marshall Davis. I investigated it in 2008 and included a long discussion of the Frank Marshall Davis relationship with Obama when I wrote The Obama Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And, the ties go back to Chicago because that's where Frank Marshall Davis came from. Frank Marshall Davis was also a photographer in Chicago, and he specialized in doing nude pornographic pictures. And, that's history. Joel Gilbert includes a lot of those pictures, nude pictures of women that Frank Marshall Davis took in Chicago in the
30s. So Jerome Corsi on the line with us here, and Jerome Corsi really needs no introduction, and they love you over on Huffington Post. I got to tell you, they're big fans of yours.
Whenever the left goes crazy over you, you're hurting them.
Oh yeah, I tell you, what are you thinking here? Why did Obama's mother and grandfather put Obama in the hands of this bisexual degenerate, Frank Marshall Davis? Did they know about this? How did this happen?
I think that they were living such a extreme leftist life, and Dunham was so far into the hippie extremism of the 60s that she probably, her background in terms of outrageous sexual activities is another one I haven't had really time to write. But she herself was pretty wild and considered pretty wild and didn't seem to care about this kid all that much. Obama was abandoned by her for years at a time, left with his grandparents to be raised. And I don't think Ann Dunham would have thought anything if he, as a child, was experiencing sex, because by the time you expand all these definitions from, you know, once you get past traditional marriage, it's a pretty slippery slope down, you know,
sure,
homosexual relationships to threesomes to pedophilia, to you name it.
So there you have Jerome Corsi, who made some pretty outlandish remarks, and yet never a lawsuit for defamation of character, because then, as I've said many times, people then get deposed, and documents become court records, and that's the last thing that Barack Obama, Bill and Hillary Clinton, and the others want to have happen. It's the last thing that they want. So Jerome Corsi mentioned a poem to Pop, which is Frank Marshall Davis, that it has been alleged, and I'm going to be official here, it's been alleged that he was a bisexual man and put in the care of Barack Obama. Well, I happened to pull up this poem, and I think that it's worth a read. Sitting in his seat, a seat broad and broken in, sprinkled with ashes, Pop swishes channels, takes another shot of Seagram's neat, and asks what to do with me. A green young man who fails to consider the film and flam of the flim and flam of the world, since things have been easy for me. I stare hard at his face, a stare that deflects off his brow. I'm sure he's unaware of his dark, watery eyes that glance in different directions, and his slow, unwelcome twitches, whatever that means, fail to pass. I listen, nod, listen, open, till I cling to his pale beige t-shirt, yelling in his ears, that hang with heavy lobes, but he's still telling his joke. So I ask why he's so unhappy, to which he replies, but I don't care anymore, 'cause he took too damn long from under my seat. And I pull out the mirror I've been saving. I'm laughing, laughing loud, the blood rushing from his face to mine as he grows small. A spot in my brain, something that may be squeezed out like a watermelon seed between two fingers. Pops takes another shot, neat, points out the same amber stain in his shorts. Gee, amber, isn't that a yellow, orangey-ish color? And what would that be doing on somebody's shorts? Now, I'm going to read that again. Pop takes another shot, neat, points out the same amber stain on his shorts that I've got on mine, and makes me smell his smell. Oh, that's not too sick, is it? So, they both have amber stains in their shorts, and Frank Marshall Davis makes Obama smell it? I mean, these are Obama's own words, folks. He switches channels, recites an old poem he wrote before his mother died, stands, shouts, and asks for a hug. As I shrink, my arms barely reaching around his thick, oily neck and his broad back, because I see my face framed within Pop's black-framed glasses and know he's laughing too. Yeah. If that is not homosexually suggestive, I honestly don't know what is. Now, I'm going to move on into another interview. And this was conducted back in 2011 by the Reverend David Manning out of New York, who has been quite critical of Barack Obama from the onset. And the man he interviews is Larry Sinclair. Now, I understand that people have discredited this man as well, basically because he has a criminal record. Well, all right. So automatically then, he's just lying about everything. I wonder how many people with a criminal record would take exception to that, basically being called a dishonest person in perpetuity, if you will. So let's move on to that interviewer. Larry Sinclair claims that he had basically an intimate relationship with Obama, knew him very well. So here we go with this clip.
All right, I believe we have Mr. Larry Sinclair finally on the line. This is a stunning book that you have written about your relationship with the long-legged Mac Daddy Obama. Tell us about your book, Larry. Just introduce it, and then we're going to get into some other details.
Well, the book basically was written, as you well know, after I tried to inform the voting public about the truth about Barack Obama, that he wasn't this clean-cut community organizing, oh, I care for my fellow man type person that his campaign tried to present him as. Like I had said over and over last year, the issues that came to mind to me was when he was, you know, pushing off his drug use that he wrote about.
Right, right.
You know, that everybody says, oh, well, he wrote about it. No, he didn't. What he wrote about was he claimed that he used certain drugs through high school, and then he stopped. And then when the press started digging a little further, he started changing his story and saying, okay, well, I did drugs up into my Columbia days or my Harvard days.
Right.
But I haven't done anything since. Every time the story just kept changing to fit his political ambitions. You know, the young people thought it was cool that he says, oh, I used to be a pothead.
Right, right.
Or that, yeah, you know, whenever we could afford it. But he didn't tell the truth. He didn't tell the truth about the fact that he was buying and selling and using drugs in Chicago, you know, as recently to me that I know for a fact as 1999, while he was in the Illinois State Senate, this was at a time when the guy was what, 37, 38 years old, and people need to, you know, to know the guy for what he truly is.
Larry, can I ask you a question? I was with you at the press conference you held in June of last year at the National Press Club, and I was really honored to be there. I came with my wife and several members of our congregation, and you had a massive, well, it wasn't a real army, but you had a massive support system there with you, and I was encouraged to see that as well. But here, and I appreciate the statements that you made. You were forthright. Uh-huh. You didn't try to hide anything about your homosexuality and how long you've been such, or your drug use or other things that you had been involved in during the course of your career. How did you meet Obama, and what did you think when you first saw him? And what was going on? This is before Obama the candidate, Obama the alleged president. What was going on in your mind and heart when you first saw this fellow?
Well, actually, the meeting, like I explained at the press conference and like is very detailed in the book, you know, the meeting was happen chance and introduction by a limo driver that was a mutual friend of his. I think when people read the book, they're going to be surprised at just what type of connections, you know, this limo driver and Tony Rezko and Barack Obama had at the time. I wasn't really that impressed with him. I mean, you know, he was a smooth talker, but he really didn't present himself that well. He was basically, to be honest with you, he reminded me of a young man that I used to know in Miami Beach back in the 1985-86. Hmm. That was the kindest soul in the world, but he was a hustler.
Yeah.
You know, he knew that he was attractive to people, and he would befriend you, but only because he wanted to hustle you. And that's exactly what, you know, I took away from with Barack Obama. It was all about a hustle. It was about, you know, how getting a few drinks and not having to pay for it. It was about getting high and having someone else pay
Hold it. You're saying to me that your first impressions of him was that of a slickster, someone, if he's at a bar, he's trying to hustle for drinks, he's anything he can hustle people in a bar. Is that what you're saying to me?
That's exactly what I'm saying to you. I mean, that was my initial impression of him. I mean, there was nothing, you know, he was nothing more than another, hundred or so people that I had met in my life prior to him.
Well, let me ask you another question. Who initiated that it go from wherever it went when you first met him in the introduction? Who initiated that it go to some sort of sexual event? Was it understood with the limo driver and Tony Resco's limo driver that's why he was being introduced to you, or what? How did that happen?
Well, no, I mean, I can't tell you what the limo driver felt or did not feel. I did not at any time tell the limo driver I was looking for sex or anything else other than just somebody who knew Chicago who would enjoy socializing. I mean, I've always been openly gay. Back then, it was very obvious to anyone around me, you know, for 5 minutes or so. The limo driver, I think, was very clear on exactly who I was and what I was, because we had used him the night before. We had also used him on a previous night. So, I mean, it wasn't a secret. I had no idea that Barack Obama was going to be a willing participant. It's like I said, when I met the gentleman and we were talking in the bar and I had mentioned the fact that I could use a line or two to wake up, you know, that was a little fishing expedition.
You need to tell people what that means, because you just went right, past a whole lot of people's heads. They don't know what that means. Tell people what that means.
Well, you know, it was a fishing expedition, and Barack Obama knew exactly what it meant, because he immediately responded, "Well, are you talking about coke, meaning cocaine?"
Right.
Which is, yes, that's exactly what I was talking about. Now, here's the thing that I want people to understand. You're going to have these Obama people who are going to go, "Oh, well, he doesn't use the correct terminology." Actually, yes, I do. You know, terminology is regional, just like the sale price of a
drug is
regional.
No, that's I can verify that from the Einstein Street.
But he knew exactly what I was talking about. And the minute I told him that's exactly what I was referring to, he made it clear that he could get it. He makes a phone call. And within 5 or 10 minutes later, I mean, we're already in the limo with him telling the limo driver where we're going, you know, and he purchases it. Now, fine. You know, people want to argue, well, he didn't really purchase it because I gave him the money. No, technically, he either purchased it or he sold it to me, because he's the one that got paid the money by me, and he's the one that brought the product back to me.
Now, you stated, and that is a purchase. I mean, he did purchase them. You may have been the middleman, but the purchase was made by him. Now, you stated as well that you had an encounter with him in the limo, and then I believe at the June press conference, you stated that he showed up at a hotel room of yours a day or so later. Am I reading that the right way?
Oh, yeah. If you read the book, you'll even find a picture of the hotel that he showed up at.
Okay.
And I know you've read the book, and I'm just teasing you when I say if you read the book. I mean,
well, I want other people to read the book as well. But go ahead.
I mean, and I do, too. I want people to read it, because I'm going to tell you what. This book, contrary to what all of the people have attacked and smeared, and you understand, because these are some of the same people that have attacked you over the last, you know, year or so, ever since you showed up on Jeff Renz and showed up at the press conference, you know, people will go and say anything. The thing I want people to do is, if you're going to say something about this book, I ask you to read it. And I guarantee you, you will not want to put it down. I guarantee you, you're going to come out of reading this book and going, you know what? He's telling the absolute truth.
I have, Larry, I have a sourced who has revealed to me Obama's bisexual habits. In fact, he's deeply involved in bisexual activity. This person that revealed this information to me, and I'm not at liberty to express who, and unlike you, I was not in control of the information. I did not have sex with Obama. I don't go that way in the first place. I'm not a homosexual, Larry. I didn't do that. But I have absolute life and death confidence in the person who gave me this information. I just don't have full control of it, and I'm at the other person's pretty much desire to how to handle information. But I came out and made a public statement about it, about his relationship and a lot of that bisexual relationship went on for many years there in the Trinity United Church of Christ. Having said that, and I will stake my life on what I'm saying about my knowledge about Obama's bisexual, his desire to have sex with men and with women. I will stake my life on that. So when I heard about you, I definitely gravitated to you. I listened first to see what you had to say, but I want the world to know that there's someone else out there that knows that Obama is certainly a bisexual, if not an outright homosexual.
Pastor Manning, I would be willing to take it a step further and say that there's more than just one other person out there.
So, you know, Larry Sinclair, okay, he has a criminal record. Pastor Manning, to my knowledge, doesn't have a criminal record, and I know that Jerome Corsi doesn't have a criminal record. Excuse me, I'm sorry. So, some of you may be wondering, well, why are you going into so-called ancient history? Why are you pulling stuff from 2013 and 2011? Well, again, I'm doing the tie-in. No other person on this planet with these kinds of accusations, and by the way, folks, just because those two clips came out of 2011 and 2013, these things were talked about Barack Obama way before those two cuts. This stuff was coming out in 2007, 2008, and I promise you, nobody on this planet with these allegations, true or false, could never have withstood such accusations and be allowed, yes, allowed, because no way would the Republicans or the Democrats, not even the Democrats, would allow such an individual to run with that cloud hanging over his head if Barack Obama wasn't half black, a Muslim, a communist, and a man that hated the United States of America, which are basically in his own words. And Michelle Obama basically shared the same sentiment. There's no way that anyone could have withstood such scrutiny. Compounded by the fact that, you know, we get this impeached Trump garbage when the man hasn't done anything remotely close to being impeachable other than putting America first and wanting to make America great again. How dare he? And as Chris Matthews says, you're a racist if you want to put America first. They have nothing else. Meanwhile, I have an article from USASupreme.com, which if you Google that name, Google puts out USA Supreme fake news. Yeah, it's only fake because this is an independent entity, and they dare to talk about truths that we've been talking about for the better part of, you know, 4 to 8 years now, that MSNBC, CNN, and yeah, not even Fox will group together and list all of his impeachable offenses and then not call out both departments of justices on it. Now, I know The Trump administration is early in the game, and I'm willing to give it time. As I've said over and over again, an arrest of a major player, an indictment, has to be served, a subpoena has to be served before the end of the year. That is plenty of time to gather enough something to at least form a grand jury, get a judge subpoena, and an arrest to be made on somebody other than some obscure individual with the name of Reality Winner. Sorry, that's not cutting it for me. So, Donald Trump, your Department of Justice, as far as I'm concerned, has 6 months to make an arrest of a significant player coming out of the Obama administration. So let's go to USASupreme.com. Here's a list of Obama's impeachable offenses. Obama broke over 30 laws and no person said impeach. I guess Obama the traitor can break laws, but our President Trump cannot tweet a message without the corrupt Democrats wanting him impeached. Unfortunately, since President Trump is the man in the White House, it looks like impeach is the Democrats' favorite word. After the New York Times claimed a memo written by former FBI Director James Comey said the president urged him to end the federal investigation, and I'm still waiting to see this memo, into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, Democrats became even more louder in their demands for impeachment of our president. That is why some members of Congress, including, and I don't know how these people are in office, Maxine Waters and Al Green, are getting in on the action. This is coming from WorldNet Daily. Even a Republican, Representative Justin Amash, claimed that Wednesday there are grounds to impeach President Trump. House Oversight Committee Chair Representative Jason Chaffetz of Utah asked for the alleged Comey memo and other documents. And I don't think we got them, do we? Chaffetz tweeted that he is prepared to subpoena the information. Well, where is that subpoena? And Senator John McCain invoked Watergate. Now the Democratic Party is reportedly poll testing impeachment as a 2018 election issue. Right, because they have no platform other than give special treatment to certain people of aberrant and abnormal behavior, promote infanticide under the guise of women's health. That's all they have. So they have to go with this impeachment narrative because they don't have a platform of anything constructive to improve the quality of our nation. So that's what they have. So I'm going to skim down. Now, the article says 30, but they seem to list 25. So let's just run them off. Obama's Iran nuke deal. Well, we know he did that out of Congress, and we know that the nuke deal was violated almost instantaneously. Obama knew, excuse me, about the allergies. Obama knew about Hillary's private email server, so he's an accomplice to her crimes. Obama's IRS targets of conservatives through Lois Lerner. We know that's a fact. Obama's DOJ spies on AP reporters. Obamacare, which is totally unconstitutional, along with his false promises, all of his alleged promises, which people who have an ounce of common sense knew he wasn't going to fulfill, knew he couldn't fulfill. Illegal alien amnesty, I like to call the DREAM Act, if that's what they're referring to, by executive order. Benghazi Gate, well, we know enough about that. Taliban leaders for Bergdahl. We know that guy's a traitor. Extortion 17. I believe, wasn't it that chopper that was shot down? Was that SEAL Team 6? I think that's what that was. I don't recall exactly. Recess appointments when the Senate was in session, and they all should have been overturned. Appointment of czars without Senate approval. Not only that, but he grabbed many, many, many members of the Muslim Brotherhood. That wasn't an accident. Suing Arizona for enforcing federal law. Yeah, he totally dismantled SB 1070, which was working. Illegal invasion numbers were shrinking. Obama didn't like that, so he interfered, sued Arizona. Well, that was hard, and basically dismantled it. Refusal to defend the Defense of Marriage Act, which, when it was vogue, he did defend it going into his running for president. But as the country became more and more perverted, he and Hillary Clinton magically evolved. Illegally conducting war against Libya. Muammar Gaddafi had changed his ways. I've talked about that. I've talked about how he... you want to talk about socialism? At least he walked his talk. The man basically lived out of a tent. He didn't live like a capitalist elitist, the typical stereotypical image. He lived like a very poor man and gave all the money to the people. Didn't hoard it, and a female education was on the rise. He was building irrigation for water. But his biggest quote-unquote failure in the eyes of the global elites was that he refused to allow a central bank to be formed, and he was creating a true gold standard for his currency, which could have become a threat to the petrodollar. Right, that was his undoing. NSA spying on Americans. Eric Snowden is a hero. He should be brought back to America, given a medal, and totally exonerated from any BS charges. Now, number 17, the Muslim Brotherhood ties. Well, I put that into the czars. Maryam Carey, and excuse me, I would have to check on that. I don't know exactly who that is. His forged birth certificate, which was obviously forged. All of his executive orders, it doesn't go into detail, but for the sake of this article and time constraints, of course, his green energy agenda, which totally blew up, Solyndra and the lost $535 million, putting in Mohamed Morsi in Egypt, a total fundamental Muslim, which I don't even think he lasted 2 years, right? Because the country was collapsing, and the people forced the military to arrest him. Cap and trade. And instead of going through Congress, he bypassed Congress, which I applaud President Trump for undoing this cap and trade nonsense. Refusal to prosecute new Black Panthers, openly threatening to kill white people. Openly threatening and coercing harassing voters in 2008 in Philadelphia. And Obama's U.S. citizen hit list. The 24-hour drone strikes killing Americans. Now, say what you will, but American citizens do deserve due process of law no matter what crimes they commit. At least declare them a military combatant. Bring them back, have them face a military tribunal, court-martial them if found guilty, then execute them. But the Fourth Amendment, according to Obama, just didn't apply to certain people. So you got to ask yourselves, why and how could this country have elected a man named Barack Hussein Obama 7 years after 9/11. And with all the allegations on this man, and then with all of these, and you have to say it because he's never been charged, all of these alleged crimes against the United States, how is he able to go unscathed? And isn't it interesting that right around the time, that right before ISIS grew, and before all of this Muslim terrorism really, really ramped up since 2008, a president is elected twice with homosexual allegations. And as proven, it seems to me that the secret societies and the Muslims engage in pedophilia and homosexuality. I don't think any of that is a coincidence. So I'm going to move on to present day, and yeah, well, we do have time constraints, don't we? I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to talk about the serious situation and this part of Donald Trump's foreign policy I am not a fan of. And then I'm going to talk about why this whole Obamacare repeal replace nonsense is a total sham and is a total lie, and the GOP have absolutely no intention of giving back the healthcare industry to the private market. And as far as I'm concerned, Donald Trump is backpedaling on what he promised to do. So I'm going to close with a song, because it seems like you people that want to throw the term conspiracy theorist and not even have an intellectual conversation, you just want to tear down and insult just like the liberals do, because you don't have an argument, because the truth is staring you in the face. You are just content with being fed little lies, sweet little lies. See you tomorrow, 10 a.m. Central Time. My name is Michael B. This is The Truth Zone.